circumstance where I have some communication from one of our audience members back and forth on different things, and Amy's sitting back there, and then Ann Ruby as well. And Ann Ruby asked a question that she was correct in what she had understood. When I checked into it, her understanding was correct, and it shouldn't have been that way. I wrote an answer to her which outlined the way it should be, and actually turned that into a memorandum for the code staff to use as guidance, and we've actually followed up on that. And then there's other things that we've been working on, and circumstances that Amy and I had communication regarding a particular house that was being needed to be demolished, and through the threat of the condemnation process, which I don't want to go further on that today.
Okay,
that place got torn down, and there's other things that are up there. Okay. As we're trying our best collectively, everybody around me is trying their best, and some of the folks that are back there are trying their best to turn it up and get more of this done, get the procedures correct, and make it as appropriate and fast-moving as possible. But it is a giant piece of work to take care of.
Look around.
And to that extent, there's a certain part of it where you've got to pick your targets as well. Because I've compared it to the shredder where you've got a whole ream of paper and say, I think I want it all gone, I'm going to stick it all in there. Well, the shredder jammed. It doesn't do its job at all. And so, and it's not as if we think that one thing is more or less important, but there are certain things policy-wise, and clearing lots where there's homeless camps and those are overrun properties and so on, are one of the things that we're giving priority to. Lynn was telling me that just over the last couple of days, one at the foot of the Oak Street Bridge,
on Oak Ridge in North Halifax,
yes, got cleared out. And there's something under the Seabreeze Bridge that we need to work on, and we know about it.
Right.
It's those are code enforcement issues, too, as it relates to overgrown lots and so on. There's another one out off Bevel and 400 that we're working on getting authority to go in there. So those things are happening. You don't know it. The property owner, in the case of this one, cleared it because we called them and asked them, and they were community-spirited, and they moved forward to do it. In other places, it may be property that's not under our control. There's different things. Those things are also happening, and it's just, it doesn't get in the press necessarily. And it's not something, we'll tell you about it if you ask us, but we're not tooting our horn. We're just trying to move forward and get things done.
Is it appropriate time for a break?
I was going to say, I could be there.
Well, is there a need to even continue?
No. Break if you don't want, we can go.
I mean, well, if the board is satisfied, or if there's other things we need to talk about.
Well, I mean, you know, we haven't heard from Denzel or Glenn if they just want to.
I tell you, Denzel loves to talk.
Yeah.
I bet Denzel can do his part in, like, quick. But if I'm wrong, Denzel, prove it to me.
So we're going to do it now.
So let's just go forward with it, and then we'll be finished.
All right. And welcome. And what I'm about to say may be a little biased, but I do have to agree with Ms. House. I think we have great staff from the building official down to all the code inspectors. And when I read in the news journal or get other communications about what we're not doing, that is a little disheartening, knowing the efforts that we are actually putting in. And before I continue, I want, and I know you see all these inspectors each month, you hear their cases, but a lot of you don't know exactly where they work at, what their zones are. So I ask them to introduce themselves to you. Let them tell you where they work at and what their responsibilities are. Start on this.
Stand up.
Good morning, John Stinson. I'm the new lead inspector, so my area is basically citywide. I help all of these guys and girls whenever they get bogged down and or they have a case that's a little bit more than what they're used to. So I'm kind of the buffer between City Hall and troops.
No, he's not. He's our linebacker.
Daniel Garcia. I work from Main Street down to Bevel and from the river over to railroad track.
I'm Glawanda Davis, and I have George Ingram South to South Street, which is Campbell Middle School. And then I have from the Seagrave Railroad west to Clive Morris, the Halifax Hospital and Mainland High School.
My name is Mark Jones. I'm doing rental inspections. I have the north side of the city from Main Street going north from the ocean out to LPGA.
I'm Jerome McCoy. I'm the rental inspector. My area is from south of Main Street over to the border.
Hey, my name is Tom Clegg. My zone is a lot different. I'm still doing the north side on the beach side, Main Street North. And also I'm doing, if you look at the map, Mason and Nova, northwest to the west city limits to the north city limits out by LPGA. And south, I'm sorry, the north side of ISB North. This is a huge chunk of the west side.
Michael Fitzgerald. My area is the south side of the beach, which would be Aura Street, south to the end of the city limits, the ocean to the bay.
My name is Barbara Collins. I start at North Charles, and I end up to Ville, France, but in between it kind of breaks up. So I'm part of to the city west, I mean, excuse me, north, to south of George Ingram. And I go down Ingram into Dunn, I turn white, and I go down ISB, and all that's to south of Mason. I do code, and I do lock lines for the city.
My name is Clifford Reckonzone. I have the south side of the city limits from the railroad tracks to all the way to the west side of the city, to the end. On the north side, I stop at South Street, and then South Street stops at Clyde Morris. I follow that all the way around the racetrack and the airport, and I take the whole south side of the International all the way out there now.
There's a map.
Board members, I have another one scheduled upstairs, and I've got folks waiting on me, so I'm reluctant to excuse myself. Thank you for letting me sit in with you. We didn't introduce Mr. Urquhart, who really commands the whole operation, not to mention all the building permits and so on that go on, and he's got some reinforcements back there, but it's a big job. You got a lot of people here, but when you hear the areas that they have to cover individually, you understand even more, I think, how big a task it is. And they're dedicated to a full-fledged effort every day. Lynn and I probably talk, I don't know, at least 10 times a week. That's like 3 or 4 times at least. These folks are trying hard. They've got a big job to do. Thank you for your time today. For me,
thank you and our secretary for finally coming up with coffee.
She knew she had to do that. And we're going to take some of these names you talked about, and we'll talk about them in a second.
Real quick, I wanted to go over the anatomy of an actual code case. And this would be, and it's in your packet, it's not on the slide. Maybe the second to the last page in your packet. And actually, when you look at it, it breaks down into really 3 scenarios. Once the inspector notices a property owner about a violation and the property owner receives it, the first scenario you see right under resolve, and it says compliance achieved within time allotted right here, that's a simple case. That just says we notified you of a violation and you took care of it within your time allotted by the inspector. The second scenario basically is it gave you, say, 30 days to correct your violation. You did not correct your violation. And the CEB2, that tells the property owner that he has to come before the board. And at that time, it's in your jurisdiction, and, you know, you will allow more time. I'll go ahead and start your proceedings how you think it should go. And if you look down, it breaks down even further, telling you to allow more time if you believe that's reasonable, and go back even further down. You can impose your fine, things of that nature. And the third scenario, and I think that one of the concerns was that you've seen some cases that appear to be drawn out. You know, it's like, oh, well, this started in 2017 and we're just receiving it. But a lot of times what happened, an inspector has tried to work with the violator, the property owner. And the property owner starts out calling for progress reports. And for some reason, either they run out of money, they walk away from the property, or they just choose not to come into compliance. So at that point, that's when the inspector will issue a CEB2, which is a notice to appear in front of the code board. So that's a lot of times when you saw the gap. So because that had become an issue, what we have started doing, and we've instructed the inspectors, once you talk to a property owner and they are telling you that they're going to need an extended amount of time, maybe another 60 or 90 days, you're probably going to bring them before the code board. Put them in your jurisdiction that where they're already there, and we can start setting progress reports. And also, it'll help us to expedite that particular case. Because if we wait 60 days and he does nothing, and then we bring him, then that's just extending that case out a little longer. So we're going to try to get him into you sooner than later. So that's the overview of our notices and our the issuance of our notices. So do you have any questions?
I have a question. This relates to the presentation of your cases. The chairman is the only one that has the complete information on a case. What we have is a very brief description. As the individual board members, we don't have all this detail. So in 80-85%, it's fine. But every once in a while, there appears to be a lack of detail for me to understand what's taken place. And I would just like you to remember that we don't have, Ouija gets it.
The only thing that comes in that big binder are the notice, when the notices, I mean copies of any kind of notice or, there's no more information given other than maybe some timeline stuff.
Yeah.
Or a copy of a notice, a copy of the violation. So there's not much more information in there. I don't find it particularly useful since I want that information recorded anyway. I ask about it, but, why did it take 6 months for this to come forward?
I'm not sure what more information you want than what's on the agenda.
You have it on the agenda. You have the word parking. What's that?
Right.
Parking.
Something more specific.
Stuff.
I got it.
But aren't they, ultimately, there's a presentation that's required, and that's the presentation that we bring.
Yeah, I understand.
And if that presentation falls short, you know, that's when you have to make the inquiries, because that's what you have the right to do.
That's what I'm saying.
So I don't have enough. What else is it?
It falls short.
I think what he's saying, when he gets his package, I believe, and you're home and you're looking and you see parking.
Right.
And it doesn't say specific, but once we get into the board, then we find out that it's a car or whatever is going on.
I think what we said, and it's important to remember, is that you don't really want to make any advanced considerations and decisions anyway. I mean, it's information, but it's not the information that guides your decision-making. Ultimately, your decision-making is what happens at that proceeding and what's presented as part of that proceeding. And any of that other stuff is you know, again, put you in the right mindset. It helps you understand that there is the general direction of what you're expecting, but ultimately your decisions should be based upon what we're presenting at the proceeding.
Sure. I mean, pick what we get for a lien review. We got this stack of stuff. For a regular case, we get one line. That's all I'm saying.
But a lien review, most times, is going to have more history, so you will have more information on that.
Right. Yeah.
And I think what you're looking for, we actually just had a meeting about this, and I spoke with Mr. Sykes. And we're going to perfect the code violation, the details that go with it. So you will have a more detailed description of what the violation was, and I think that will help you out.
That's what I'll Mr. Weatherall and I went to the county, and the cases are presented strictly by the code enforcement office. And they had a slide went up there of the timeline. I saw them then, I saw them here, I talked to them. That's all I'm saying. It's just more comfortable to me to have that.
Very professional.
Than just verbally, because people leave. And I want to make sure I'm hearing. That's all.
And on that case, we could probably be inclusive of our chronology reports that they do put in to track it and give that to you, and that would give you more information at that time.
I'm not criticizing anybody for their work. I just say, sometimes they're not telling
you
everything they did.
We can work on that as far as being more detailed.
Any other questions?
What they do to Desmond County, they'll actually put up on the board, on the slide, the complete chronology of the case. Mm-hmm. And then they'll actually put their recommendation, what they want the staff to do, board to do. They'll actually put it up on the board.
Really?
So, so it really helps out. But again, you got to remember, we're talking about a lot more cases.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more cases than you got here. And they have no, we had 25 pages last week of cases.
How long do those meetings take?
We were out at 2 o'clock, we started at 9, we're out at 2 last week. But usually, it used to be not so bad, but as Mark could tell you, it's getting bad for some reason lately.
They move pretty fast.
All right, well, thank you.
You're welcome. I wanted to introduce a couple more people that we have here. Behind you are demolition rehabilitation inspector John Cecil, and to his right is Bo Snowden. He's a deputy code official. And then June Barnes, who takes care of the code board and the magistrate. I mean, you're familiar with her. Of course, we get Amy Hampton over here. But as far as some of the questions you had on for myself, with the BTR on the rental process, I mean, you could actually go into detail on either one of them, but with the BTR being that's basically your authorization to run a business, then with your rental, that's confirmation the rental is okay. But with each process that we go into, so when they come in for business tax receipt, they have to actually go through a whole checklist with our department. And we are just in the midst of refining that process, fine-tuning it. We just hired a new license officer. So by going through this, it's in the raw form, the new form. But their first thing is for the use. Is that even allowed where it's at? So we're making changes as we go. It's going to be more for the positive. So that way they do more of the research on the background of whether or not you can even run that business, where it is, and what zone. That's the first step. After that, it's about all the background information of the actual person running the business and the location. Once they're approved, the application being approved for that, we do an inspection on the field, and that way we can actually see where they're running the business itself, and we check as far. We have basically fire inspectors / building inspectors that can go through this and identify if everything's okay on it. Rental. We have our rental inspectors both over here, Jerome and Mark, and they both check out when we have a license applied for it. So being where we're at now with this new process, it didn't happen a lot in the past as far as getting out there, but with the new process, the inspections are happening, and we're able to identify a lot of the code violations that go along with these places. So I'm hoping in the future that this helps as far as y'all as board members, that the older cases, as we go to refine them, they'll get better with the new process in place. But we can't fix what was in the past and what was old. All we can do is move forward as we change things. We're changing things a lot with staff, both in building, both in code. You can see all these guys. I mean, they have big zones to cover. And where they got to start each one of their days is they start, we're complaint-driven. So they start off with, these are all the complaints for their zone. After that, then they got to go to the next and to the next, answer the phone calls, answer the emails. So by the time you actually get out the door, it might be 10, 30, 11 o'clock. By the time you get back in and you squeeze lunch in there, it could be 2 o'clock, and then all of a sudden you have a whole other list of complaints and everything. So it's a hard business. We know what we're in for, and you know we do our best job with what we have here, but it is complaint-driven, and so but we do have to answer every complaint that comes in from the citizens. Going more into, after that, permits and licenses as part of the process on that. I know with all you, did they pull a permit? And then once they go get the permit, what's the process on that? How long does that last for? When you go and apply for the permit, just because you apply for a permit, that used to close a case in the past. That is not the case now. So it will stay posted, and the citation will stay there until it's completed. So now what happens is you pull the permit, gets reviewed, you get issued the permit. Now you have to complete what the violation was for, as far as that was in the detail. So if it was a roof, until that roof is final, the permit's final, and then they go back out and do their final inspection. So you get a final inspection not only from the building inspector, also from the code enforcement officer. So that's what will close the case. In the past, that wasn't the issue. The case was closed once they pulled the permit. And typically what happens, and I know you all see this all the time, the permit gets posted, the yellow fades, then 180 days goes by, nothing happens, it exists out there in hyperspace until the next complaint comes in. The new process is that case will not go away until that code violation is actually fixed. So that's in effect now.
Are you giving them a receipt of some sort when they apply for the permit? They go out of there with some kind of...
Yes.
Because I keep asking the people that I can't produce it. So somewhere, either deliberately...
Yeah, they have it. And even if they lost it, they can come in and get it reprinted. They go across the hall, they pay for it, they get the receipt for it, then they also get the copy of the permit.
They pull the permit, there's no excuse for them to say they have no record of it.
100%.
They pull this all the time.
Yep.
Apply, we don't give them a receipt. It's only when we issue
the
permit.
Well, yeah, yes. Once again, not
way
just...
You could give them a simple little receipt that says they applied, don't apply.
Well, once you apply, I mean, the permit turnaround time, what happens, I know a lot with all the cases, they'll come in and apply the day before they're going in front of the board.
Yeah.
So all they have to do is, with our turnaround time on permits, it's usually 3 to 5 days, if not quicker. So as long as they apply for it and get that permit turned around, they should have the permit in hand, and they know when they're going to see you, so not to wait till the last day. That's just making their case harder. So, yes.
And also, once the case is being presented to you, the officer, the inspector, will have that information. So, if the inspector tells you it's not a permit,
they don't have it.
They don't have it.
Yeah, because in the consideration, you know, oftentimes the structural, they have had plans reviewed or whatever the case may be.
Inspectors make sure within 48 hours of the hearing that the case is updated with photos as well as any new pertinent information. So once it comes before the code board, the information is there.
Yeah, they're not going to get the receipt until they actually pay for it. But to show that the application is in the system, they could come down and we could generate something for them right before they get ready to go up to you. So there is some type of paper form that we could do.
We also have access to track it in the room upstairs.
Yeah, they could show you right there.
Any case and see what's been applied.
Okay.
But recognize also you have a sworn statement of an officer saying it was done.
Yep.
Right.
And if it's in dispute, then you'll have to decide whether you believe that sworn statement or some other proof from the other side. If someone says, he's wrong, then show me where he's wrong. Do you have something?
I would like to be in that situation. If you don't have the evidence, then that's what I'm going to take. If you don't have a copy of something in the process, then too bad.
Yeah, one of the code officers could go ahead and pull it up on track, and while they're there, then prove right there that they did make application, and it is in the process of being reviewed. But once it is reviewed, if they had applied for it several days before, they would have that in hand if they paid for it, and they would be able to produce a receipt.
Yeah, come in the day of.
The day of, yes, I understand that.
They pay for it at the application time or when they get the bill?
Once it's issued.
So they don't have to pay until it's issued.
Until it is, yeah, because it has to get reviewed and everything. Once it goes through the process, then we'll go ahead and apply the fees because you have a mechanical, electrical, or plumbing examiner that will apply those fees, and then those fees will be tallied, and then they'll have to pay.
In terms of PR, I thought I saw on the chart, what do they call that when the police department has
it? Public information officer?
No, when they plot each process.
Comstat.
Yeah, I thought I saw something for code
enforcement.
Yeah.
Did you? Several
years ago. That would be very useful for, not for us, but for your PR. It shows how many cases you got and you're working on.
Well, what we actually implemented, and we started this last week, is through both our demolition inspector as well as our code enforcement inspectors, we are going to start identifying the larger cases, before and afters, and this information is going to be given to our public information officer, Susan Sabone, so all that information can be obtained through her, and we're going to be utilizing her. We're going to try to do it weekly, if not bi-weekly, and whatever we have for that week, we're going to get her that information, and that information will reflect the positive of what is actually being done as opposed to all the negative. And That's in effect actually starting last week. We just started that.
Okay, I have a question. Rental inspectors go inside a property. Code inspectors in general have to do everything from outside? They're given permission, okay, to go inside.
Yes.
The rental inspections are only done on rental properties, but they really get to see something, but not on single-family houses. So unless somebody gives a code officer permission to go inside, I mean, there could be a lot more violations if it's a single-family owner-occupied house.
Right.
There could be a lot more violations and even more dangerous violations than what is going on that can be seen from the outside. Is that right?
Could be. That's correct. But in a lot of the situations, in a lot of the cases that are being turned over to us, that we're being proactive on chasing after them, if we're put into a situation, because I go out on a lot of the inspections myself as well with Mr. C, someone, if it's in a situation where there's squatters or if we think there's drug activity going on, the police have tune us into that. If we need to have backup with the police department or if we need to get a warrant, we'll go through our attorneys to go ahead and get that. That I can deem it as a fire inspector, building official. If it's imminent danger, we can check it out. But in other situations where there might be something else going on, if we deemed it was danger to the public, then we can get a warrant.
But if it's a rental unit, whether it's a individual home or a duplex or apartment building,
right,
why don't those rules apply to all of those that you're renting them? Why can't you go into them?
If it's a rental license that they apply for, then automatically they'll get the rental inspection. Right. Unfortunately, there's a larger amount of actual rentals, and the ones that aren't proactive where they actually follow the rules and get their licenses, there are the ones that slip through the cracks, and what happens is those come into complaint form, and once they come into complaint, that's when we have to go after them through the process. But if they haven't been identified and we don't know about them, that's why the complaint process is great, because it brings it to our attention. But if we don't know about it, we really can't do anything about it.
Well, I mean, once the rental, the person renting, whether it be a house or apartment or whatever, once they have a complaint and they give you authorization to go in and see, you can obviously go in.
Yes.
If you're still doing vacation rentals and taking it to this board, we haven't seen any of those for a long time.
I have done. I mean, as far as on the rentals, with you,
we had a batch of them several months ago.
Right. Longer than
nothing since.
They'll bring you whatever violations they find, you know, appropriately to the board. So if there's violations to bring, they'll bring them.
There was a proactive.
There's no, but we're not, you know, singling, targeting, or finding anything. But yeah.
But if it is complaint driven that someone says that there's a short term rental, then we follow up on it. Then you follow up. Yeah, we can't. If we don't have the information on it, we don't know what's going on. Because we don't just go house to house with all the residents
right.
and see what's going on. So, but if a complaint does come to our attention, then we follow up on it and see what's going on with it. Have you established, I know I talked to the city manager about short-term rentals, not getting deep into that, but have they established the zones where short-term rentals are available at the present time?
I guess I think that's what Ms. Morris is saying. That's something he probably could better address
right.
with where they're going and how they're working with those individually with, because it's kind of a little bit outside the scope of.
Right.
Because I asked the city manager.
Yeah.
One other question. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And haven't received the answer yet. I'll touch base with Mr. Morris on that.
Okay.
He'd be able to go ahead and go in a little bit more depth on the short-term rentals.
Right.
When we talk about health and safety issues, you know, like when something comes before the board that, you know, a green pool or a pool without fence, or are there definitions of those things, of health and safety issues? I mean, some are really obvious.
Well, with the health and safety issues pertaining to pools are actually, that will be part of the process that we're addressing proactively, especially with everything that goes on in today's society. It is considered an attractive nuisance.
Right.
I mean, as a kid's going by, he sees that pool there, there's
right.
no fence. If anybody has the addresses on them, get them to me, and we'll address them right away. But
you know, pools, retention areas, kids get around retention areas too.
Right.
Yes. The fence break, there's a fence, but it's disrepair. Public Works? Or
bring it to our attention,
okay.
and we'll follow up and make sure something happens for it.
But it's not just pools. There are other situations that, you know, affect health
yeah.
and safety. Do we have
probably
definitions of those things?
Probably the biggest issue came up is the hotel down on the beach. You know, that just came up. You were present there. You put a condemnation on it, you know, the amount of time that they had to respond to it.
Right.
But one of the issues that came up is where it had undermined under the sidewalks that people were staying under there.
As
far
well,
as on the perimeter actually going around.
Actually, if we're going to talk about the specific
well,
days, we probably want to
okay, all right,
that.
Just using
okay.
that.
Right, come back.
But the general question and the
right.
answer, and I think... It's the right question for Glenn. It's the question of, you know, defining health,
right.
safety, and welfare.
Right.
And I think ultimately, when you start, especially when you're talking structural, you know, we're looking to our chief building official to say, hey, this is, you know, health, safety problem.
I personally go out there and make the assessment on there. If
okay.
it's a health and safety issue, whether it's myself or one of the representatives for our department, we'll send somebody out there and make that assessment
okay.
For the health and safety as far as for defense of the public.
Is the fire department still doing it? Could we have a
no, we have six fire inspectors on staff with our own department, and we're fully fitted to make that assessment.
And quite honestly, if you got to a point, and this is one where you can look to your council, but if you got to a point as a board where it seems great, it's just not quite there, you can actually say, okay, I want you guys to come and bring me law or proof or
right.
something else, more information, if you don't believe that you have the information to make the decision that you're about to make.
I just wondered where, you know, where the line was where it's just a violation.
Yeah, I don't think there's
versus,
a specific line.
There is no specific
yeah.
line.
You have to make
saying.
That decision based upon the
okay.
evidence you hear.
Okay.
Testimony.
Okay.
And I
yep.
think that since you've come on board, Glenn, that you're doing an excellent job. I see a lot of different stickers throughout the city. I think that's very important to the city.
thinking. I credit that to the staff that we have aboard right now. We've made a lot of changes, and everybody's on the same page as what we're trying to accomplish.
Good. No, I thank all of you. I know. I mean, after doing this, what I do just on this board, what we do on this board, we know how many cases there are out there. People aren't aware that you don't. I mean, how many cases? Everybody says we need to be proactive. That you need to be proactive. Well, you also have to answer everybody's complaint. So it doesn't leave a whole lot of time. And I'm hoping that we see really, you know, just some different things going on. And it seems they are. But I really want to have the information about the new board that was formed and the blight. So people need to understand that. I mean, it's one of the things that goes on is nobody understands what the process of code enforcement is. No matter how many times you tell them, they don't get it.
And I'd be more than happy to meet with you on that as far as pertaining to.
But I really was floored the other night.
Right. And because that's not on our agenda item as far as on that, because I could answer that question for you.
Right. And so, even with foreclosures, people don't understand that. You know, right. So there's so much going on that the general public doesn't understand, and it makes your heart, it makes your job harder, and makes it easier for people to criticize about, you know.
Yeah, I think definitely follow up, like as Jim Moore said, as far as
I'm going to do that.
Yep.
Okay.
Get with him on the foreclosures and as far as the legal process on the background of that. And you can set up with myself as far as on the condemnation process.
Okay.
As well as we'll discuss on the board.
Okay, good.
Well, would it be convenient for you, like, after our meetings? It's always a good time for us to talk. We're there, and we all...
Well, it's one-on-one.
Oh, it's only one-on-one?
Yeah, I don't want you to talk to them at the same time.
About?
You could talk to them individually, one-on-one. That's fine.
But if he could...
General Allen?
No, I mean, if you want to sit down and talk to any staff member one-on-one.
Oh.
I just don't want to do it again.
Right. Oh, that's fine.
So, like you as a representative, if you wanted to, we could set it up on another day.
Okay.
And we can go ahead and go over that, and you can bring that information back to the board.
Right. That's fine. All I was really, I mean, I think what was asked was that if you, at some point after a meeting, if you could come and just tell us what the board is and what their duties are, or why it doesn't apply to us, or, you know, how it's separate from us. I think that's kind of what the question was, not about a specific property. Would that be okay?
Well, I think that Jim said he would talk to you about
it. Yeah, he would.
Yeah, so
I think everybody would be interested in
it. You could bring that back to the board.
Okay.
What they do is really not going to concern us. Unless it does concern us.
Well, unless it does, right.
Exactly. We should come into the
Okay.
Okay, I hope that it's
Thank
been informative for both sides, and we really enjoy having you here and having them here and having our discussion, as well as the public.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I have another assistant city attorney.
Thanks for coming.
Right?
No. He tried to pull a hat away from the horn, right?
But I had a hard time.
He's giving up court stuff. He recused himself. And I told him, I don't care if you're recused yourself.
I'm confident, Joe. Last night he told me I
had a
problem.
He recused himself. Why can't I make a living? Well, I told him I don't want to do that. But the county council screwed me about that. I told Chairman not to
reapply.
That's the best way to just do it. And solve the problem. And they reapply.
Most of mine, of course, are coming through the building.
They're a highway.
Hopefully, everyone else.
No. The first person who's doing it is pro bono. But then when he started.